Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 169 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom.
And Sarah Lytle, along with the rest of the crew. Our featured musical artist this month is Isaac Carter, also known as Father Kentucky. He recorded a version of his song, Poets, Singers, and Painters, live in our studio as a tribute to our departed friend, David Denman. We will also hear David's tall tale, Grandpa's Outhouse.
We have interviews with Mandy Kincaid and Layla Davis from the Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition, plant-based chef Dusty Condon, who shares information about cooking for Alpha Gal, and Carolyn McCutcheon from the Brown County Playhouse.
We also have another stoveside survey from Rick Albertson and an essay from Dave Seastrom.
In a tribute to our recently departed friend David Denman, we'll share a favorite tale of his entitled Grandpa's Outhouse, which was recorded in June 2019 at our Story Slam event. But first, segment one begins with our interview with Isaac Carter, who performs as Father Kentucky. He's a drummer for Hammer and the Hatchet, and he's also an engaging solo performer on the guitar and banjo. We'll hear his recording of Poets, Singers, and Painters.
Well, hello, this is Rick Fettig. I'm here with the Brown County Hour, and we're here with Father Kentucky. He's our musical guest this month, and welcome, Father Kentucky.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. It's Isaac Carter is your name. So I'm sure people are curious, because I was, how you came up with the title of Father Kentucky.
Yeah. During most of my live shows, I'd make a little spoof, you know, and say, well, I'm not a dad, I'm not a priest, I'm not from Kentucky. And that'll either get a chuckle or that'll, you know, tick some people off. So I get people ask me that a lot. I got it from my grandpa, who lived in Kentucky, and growing up, we'd always go and visit him, and I would say, hey, Dad, when are we going to visit Father Kentucky? Mm-hmm. And when I was coming up with a stage name, I was like, hey, that Father Kentucky thing, that we called Pap all that, and he said, no, that was just you. You're the only one that called him that. So I guess I did make it up. Therefore, it's mine.
Well, tell us about that. When you started playing, and what instrument, and you play several instruments. So, what? Give us a little bit of your childhood history that brought you up to this point in time.
So, growing up, my dad played music, so it was always around. Again, around when I was 11 or 12, I decided I want to play some guitar and play some drums. So I would learn a Beatles song on guitar. I have my dad help me and show me. And then I would try to learn it on drums. And that was really hard. I spent probably a good 2-3 years just kind of workshopping that on my own. While I was doing that, I grew up next to this Catholic family who were also metalheads. And I started a band with my buddy Eli.
Okay.
And I was the front man of a metal band called Shrapnel for a bit. That was the
metal
team. Yeah, no, it was good old thrash metal.
Yeah.
did a lot of that, did a lot of shredding and all that. And while I was doing that, I was participating in high school marching band. And by the time I graduated high school, I really liked marching band. So I ended up quitting the metal band and did marching band professionally for 7 years after.
Oh, really? Yeah. And that was with the drum?
Yeah, that was in drumline. Yeah. Played quads.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, I can still feel them.
That's when I quit. It was when I had to start marching and wearing wool suits and in the summertime. You know?
It was hard. But I learned a lot. I think I attribute a lot of my musicality and just my practice habits to that.
Yeah.
And it was also around, it must have been 2018, because I marched with people from all over the world, and I started hearing more music. So I was hearing the Swedish folk music. I was hearing Japanese techno. I got stuck on this guy, the tallest man on earth. He's a Swedish folk musician. And that's when I picked up the acoustic, picked up banjo from him. And that's when I really started to hone in on what I'm doing
develop.
Now.
Develop. Yeah. The way I met you was you came into the Brown County Inn for an open mic night. Had you been on the stage much before that?
Not too much. That was around the time I started getting on stages when we met at Brown County Inn. I was going to open mics in like Plainfield, Greenwood. That was when I was starting to, you know, play in front of people. You could kind of say that Brown County is where I'm cutting my teeth.
Speaking of the open mic at the Brown County Inn, there was a good friend that always came in there, David Denman, and we just lost him recently. And I think now would be a good time. If you wanted to, you could. He always requested a certain song for you.
He did.
And maybe you could do that song for us.
Yeah, I'd like to. I also met Dave at the Brown County open mic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this is the song he grabbed onto. It's called Poets, Singers, and Painters.
There's so much to be said, but not enough poets. They're all working their lines, too drunk to be sad, though they don't even know it. They've gone for themselves to aspire. While the evening sun has fallen, missing their eye, how could it be there's nothing left for them? There's so much to be said, but not enough poets. They've all let their pens run dry. There's so much to be heard, but too many singers drown their voice in sorrow. They see all the others and say, God, what do they know to walk such bravado? While the mockingbird's recalling auld lang syne, could it be you just want to listen for a while? There's so much heard, but too many singers clip their wings before they fly. There's so much to see, not enough painters. Their faces have all been drawn art of impressions, the same self-expression. There's no self anymore. What's the use of all this splatter on the wall? Could it be it don't mean a damn thing after all? There's so much to see, not enough painters to ever see it all.
This is Rick Fettig. I'm here with the Brown County Hour, and we're here with Father Kentucky. He's our musical guest this month, and that was Poets, Singers, and Painters. To bring us into current life, you got a lot going on these days, and you're playing with several different groups and getting out and about. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so I'm playing a lot with Hammer and the Hatchet recently. We recorded an album, and I was on drums, and we did that at Echo Park in Bloomington. And we've been playing a lot of cool shows, and we've got some cool stuff lined up this year. I mean, sometimes I'll, you know, pick up a show with my buddy Dietrich or Ben Fusen, you know, play along with them. We always have a good time. I guess recently I recorded a demo of mine. I did all the recording at my dad's studio. I did my best. I learned how to master and mix and put it on CDs, and I've got, I think I got like 42 more songs to record. So I guess that's what I'm looking forward to is recording those songs again. And,
okay. But your dad has a studio that you can work in.
Yeah. He and I built it when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay. Who would be on this, or would it be a solo endeavor and then add people, or how would you go about doing that?
So I do have some songs that I wrote with like a string band in mind, and recording on my own is nice, but I like the idea of recording a live session with a bunch of people. So I've got songs that, you know, cater more towards that. Yeah. I've got songs that I should do on my own.
Is there a way for some people to get a hold of you on the internet or anything like that?
Yeah, most social media stuff, Father Kentucky on Facebook, Father.Kentucky on Instagram. I guess that's really the only two I populate, but I do have Bandcamp now. So you can check out Father Kentucky at Bandcamp. I've also got a website in the works. That'll be FatherKentucky.com.
And hear your music? Is that where they can hear some of the music?
Yeah, Bandcamp is where I have my collection.
Well, okay, Isaac, Father Kentucky, we are certainly happy to have you here. This is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour and Father Kentucky. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are some people who leave a mark, not just through what they do, but through how they make others feel. And our friend David Denman was one of those rare souls. David's gentle, joyful presence endeared him to our community. He was equally at home playing harmonica at an open mic, competing in a dart tournament, or welcoming folks to his springtime maple syrup gatherings. We first met David back in 2019 at our Story Slam series. A gifted storyteller, within moments of stepping on the stage, he had everyone leaning in, spinning tales of John Muir, coyotes, and even an old outhouse. David passed away in February, and the response from the community has been extraordinary. His brother Ed recently reached out to express gratitude for the love and care shown to their family from people all over the country. David loved a good laugh, and he loved a good story, and it means a lot to share one with you now. From 2019, David Denman with Grandpa's Outhouse.
Another frequent flyer, David Denman. Welcome, David.
Well, you know, we all have someone special in our life, someone that we remember, whether we're from America or from Germany or Linton. And the thing about them is somebody could say a word, you could smell something, you could be stuck in a rainstorm, something would spark your memory, and they are instantly there with you. For me, it was my grandfather. And my grandfather's smile could lighten up a dark day. I mean, when I think of my grandfather and his smile, I can almost see him. Big guy, 6'4", bib overalls, always a hat, a cuff shirt, depending on the day my grandma did her wash, white, gray, or blue, and always a farmer. Well, why is my grandpa special to me? When I was a kid, I was little Bobby. I was a rascal. I got kicked out of the Catholic school. And then I didn't want to do things with my family. So I was so cantankerous that they said, okay, you can go over to your friends and shoot his new BB gun, and we're going to visit. Well, I was visiting, and my grandma and my grandpa came over and picked me up. That's odd. They didn't say much. They just took me home to their farm. I found out that my mom and dad and my two sisters were killed in a car wreck. So I lived with my grandma and grandpa. And every morning we had breakfast. And every morning, grandpa'd say, thank you, Mom. We're going to work. He'd get up and take me with him. So I grew up. I worked there on the farm. I loved my grandpa. But I grew up, you know. And I wanted to go. So I left. Man, did I leave. I went east. I went to the big city. I spent all my money. I did all kinds of things that I shouldn't do. And then I realized, you know what? It's a lot better back there. Like the prodigal son, I just woke up one night and I said, damn, I got to go see my grandpa. His smile could just make everything right. So, even though you haven't seen his smile, I hope you'll get it, the feel of it, by the end of this story. I drove all night, just crashed through. You've taken long drives like that. You know what it's like. Alaska to Indiana. But when I got there, I wanted to straighten up a little bit. I cleaned up, you know, went to a restroom, threw water on my face. And I'm driving over to where the farm is. When I went down the lane, everything's familiar. Oh boy, I'm almost there. And what's this? There's all these cars parked in the fields, probably 15, 16 cars and a crowd of people. So, you know, I hadn't been there for a long time. So I pulled in and moseyed around and listened. I soon got the gist of it. There was groups of people. This group wanted to blow it up, start over. I went over to this group. No. We're just going to move it and build a new one. What the heck are they talking about? And another one said, no, it's quaint. Let's clean it and reuse it. Well, the blow it up and the build it again, they won. So we're all together now like a bunch of giddy kids. The guy ran up and threw a charge into the old outhouse and ran back, jumped behind the wall, and everybody's, it's going to blow up. It's going to go into the sky. And just about as soon as he jumped over the wall, you hear, I knew that sound. It was the back door of the house. I looked up, and here comes Grandpa out of the house. He's hauling butt for the outhouse, taking down the straps of his bib overalls, and everybody's shouting at him, no, no. He can't hear. He don't have his hearing aids in. He's going to the outhouse. Right about the time he stepped in the door and went, it blew up. The door went one way. The roof flew off the top. The walls went sideways, and here's Grandpa flipping through the air, and he lands out in the field in a haymow, and everybody runs over, and of course, you know, what do? They crowd around him, and too close, oh, God, he's dead. He wasn't bleeding. but he wasn't moving. And all of a sudden, he lets out a sigh, and his eyes blinked, and he smiled and said, "Hoo-wee, I'm glad I didn't let that one go in the house."
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from R. Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
Plant-based chef Dusty Condon, former proprietor of the Tasty Plate in Morgantown and currently running a vegan food truck, talks about her outreach offering Alpha Gal cooking classes and her campaign to adopt an Alpha Gal Aware logo for local restaurants. We'll also hear some recommendations of Alpha Gal safe items available at a few of the local eateries from Jerry Foster. But first, we'll listen to an interview with Mandy Kincaid and Layla Davis from the Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition. This segment will close with Father Kentucky's Song from the Future.
This is Pam Rader for the Brown County Hour. I'm here with members from the Recovery and Wellness Coalition, and I'm going to let you both introduce yourselves, and thank you for coming.
Thank you for having us. My name is Layla Davis. I'm the Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition Coordinator. I also work at Centerstone. I'm from Brown County, and I'm a person in long-term recovery.
And I am Mandy Kennard. I chair the Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition. I also manage the Brown County Centerstone office. I, too, am from Brown County and also a parent of kids in Brown County schools. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that begs the question. Tell us about your coalition, how it got started, what it's about.
Yeah. Let you do that. Go ahead, Layla.
The Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition is the local coordinating council for Brown County. In the state of Indiana, every county has the opportunity to set up a local coordinating council under the Drug-Free Communities Initiative that began in the 90s under Governor Bayh. And these are organizations that set up programs locally in the communities to address substance use.
Okay, and how long has our chapter, so to speak, been going?
Before me, that's for sure. It's been before me. I know that prior to us being in our roles in leadership, it was chaired, I think, by Linda Hobbs. I don't know if you all know her.
Yes,
and then Dr. Hammack helped a lot while she was here, too. But it might be good, too, Layla, if you don't mind, just share what the mission and vision is so people have an idea of what it's about.
Yeah. So the Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition's mission statement is to prevent and reduce substance use in Brown County. We envision Brown County as a thriving community where recovery is possible for everyone.
Yeah. And then we have 3 subcommittees as a part of that coalition: the Justice Services Subcommittee, Treatment and Support Subcommittee, and the Prevention and Education Subcommittee. So you're kind of like working on all 3 of those targeted areas when we're building community projects and initiatives.
And what exactly is the building community? Do you have recovery groups that talk back and forth? Do you have outreach?
So within that, we have a comprehensive community action plan. And so each of those subcommittees has targeted goals and initiatives. I also chair the treatment and interventions portion, which is one of the main reasons we're here today. One of the many projects I feel like we're doing is increasing naloxone access in the community.
So I see the boxes around, like at the Y and stuff. Yeah. And I always thought, well, what if I ran into someone? Do you have to find a vein? Do you have to shoot them with a needle? I mean, are there directions on it?
Yeah. So naloxone is the opioid overdose reversal drug. And initially, when it first came out, they were primarily syringe, in syringe form, but the almost all of them now are nasal. So there's no needle involved. You don't have to find a vein. It really does. It just goes in your nose and it's a quick squeeze, kind of like Flonase or something like that. Mm-hmm. But we have expanded them to, I think we have 12 locations now. Our most recent site was added 2 weeks ago through the Brown County State Park. They've added one at the campground. Prior to that, the most recent one that was added was at Mother's Cupboard. But we have them out multiple places in town, and as well as like out in more of the rural areas. We have the Southern Brown Fire Department, the Jackson Township, that's the Helmsburg. It's always the Helmsburg Fire Department to me, but I think it's technically Jackson Township, Cordray Sweetwater Fire Department. So we have them like further out in the community so people don't have to get to town to be able to access them. They can take as many doses as they want to. They're completely free 24/7 outside. They can access them anytime that they want to. Again, just to make sure people understand, there's really, you can't overdose on naloxone. You know, it is something that you're not going to hurt anyone by using naloxone. It is protected. You are protected to be able to use naloxone in good faith, similar to like performing CPR, things like that. And it is something that we would still encourage people to call 911 with and to seek, you know, to seek additional care. Oftentimes, it can take more than one dose of naloxone to help reverse an overdose, and it only lasts for a period of time. So you don't want to run the risk of, you know, helping someone in that moment, and then they begin to overdose again, and you don't have naloxone with you.
So the packets in the are one dose only.
One dose only. I would encourage people to always take 2 to 4. Yeah.
And if the person's not breathing, the nasal spray still works?
Yes. If you are concerned that someone has overdosed, you should absolutely use that. And then the recommendation is that you call 911 and you perform CPR if you're comfortable. If not, mm-hmm. do what you're comfortable with. But you would perform CPR until help arrives. And then after 3 minutes, you would administer another dose of naloxone.
And is there an expiration date? Like if someone took one and kept it in their car?
Generally 2 years and they should be clearly listed on here. But you can toss out the old and get new. I would say if you only have expired naloxone, I'd use it. You know, most people say it still works, but if you have access to keeping it current, then I would say 2 years.
Do you look for volunteers to join your coalition?
What a great question. Yes. The coalition is open to the public, as are the subcommittees, and we're always looking for new faces. We were just talking at the last coalition meeting on how to get information out and really pull in more people. Always looking for anyone that wants to even just spend a little bit of time. You probably won't get out the door without being assigned a task, or you can just come and listen and just, you know, take in the information, add to the conversation. There's no expectation, but absolutely, we would love anyone that would like to join us.
And so how do they contact you?
So the Brown County Recovery and Wellness Coalition meets the second Thursday of the month from noon to 1:30 p.m. at the Career Resource Center, where Nashville Elementary used mm-hmm. to be. For those that don't know, you can do that. You can just show up. There's no invite needed. Or you can email bcrawc07@gmail.com. bcrawc07@gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming in. This is Pam Rader on behalf of the Brown County Hour, and I've been speaking with two members of the Recovery and Wellness Coalition.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Greetings, folks. This is Sarah Lytle with the Brown County Hour, and my guests tonight are helping us understand a little bit more about living with alpha-gal and eating with alpha-gal. So I have Jerry Foster.
Thank you.
And Dusty Condon.
Hello.
And so, Jerry, I would like you to kind of start us out, because you're one person who's not afraid to eat out.
I'm not afraid to eat out, mainly because of my attitude about eating. I think that if you get invited to eat out, you should make it a social event and go even if you're not going to eat there. And once you're there, you can look around and see, oh, I might be able to, I could have eaten that, or I could have adapted to that.
And you can also talk to the staff in a restaurant. You've had some success with that.
Yes, I think the staff in Brown County changes quite a bit. First of all, most of the staff is going to be 15, 16 years old. So you're trying to talk to that person and convey something to a chef that's in the kitchen. So you have to be aware of that. But they're very willing to do that, and they're I find them very helpful.
And so ways to make adaptations and work with the chef, I have talked to some people and they have them wrap it in aluminum foil to not have cross-contamination. There are some foods that you pretty much just know you can eat. It varies across the table.
I usually start out just by looking at the menu and seeing this is something I would eat, you know, like broccoli is a good example. You know, pretty much every restaurant is going to put butter of some kind on the broccoli. So you start the conversation there. You know, I have a dairy allergy. I can't eat butter. And can you ask the chef if he can make the broccoli in a way that I can eat it? And they used to come back with some great ideas.
You told me before that you kind of extra tip the people who help you out.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of tipping for the people that are coming after me, because I thought if a young waitress would get an extra tip for just paying attention to somebody's allergies, that maybe she'd do that and remember it for the next person.
And so, Dusty, one of your passions with Alpha Gal and food is cooking.
Yes.
And adapting recipes.
Well, I come from a long line of lovely ladies who have just taught me some really cool skills, from El Salvadorian to Japanese food to Italian to all of these different things. And thank goodness cooking Japanese for the last 25 years does not require a lot of dairy. So, you know, that's been easy for me. But going on this adventure and opening a vegan food trailer in a restaurant, is that the Alpha Gal people quickly became one of my number one food bases. So teaching them how to do a dairy product with a Country Crock heavy whipping cream, or knowing that a plant-based butter is a great swap for traditional. One of the things that I do encourage people to do is to not throw their recipe books away, their cookbooks away, and just to be able to not get so caught up in your mind that it's not actual dairy products, that there are great substitutes that fall under the vegan and the plant-based stuff. So don't be intimidated by it. Just modify it and play with it as needed. One of the things that I try to encourage people to do is to look up Great Depression cooking, because it omits a lot of dairy products and it's a cost-effective way to cook.
So both of you talked to me about just not losing hope and not letting food be your enemy, but keep being social, meeting friends, educating our staff and our restaurants. And that takes me to the other point you want to talk about tonight, and that's the logo. You're going to develop an Alpha Gal logo.
I actually have a Alpha Gal awareness, allergen awareness sticker that I put on my food truck, on my menu, on the front of the restaurant that I used to have. And it was becoming almost every other person that knew somebody with it. So we are in the works of developing our own logo for amongst us, so we can recognize it locally, and then hopefully it grows and spreads.
There are more and more restaurants in town that are going that way in helping us out.
Dusty, if people want to know more about recipe alterations or where you're going to be preparing and offering food, how do they get a hold of you?
It's the Tasty Plate. It's on Facebook and on Instagram. You can Google us for our phone number, but we will keep our trailer schedule and other opportunities for us to be able to come in-home to teach how to do some dairy-free items, cooking and creams and things like that. We keep our schedule for the food trailer going. And once we launch for the season, we'll look at some in-home opportunities to be able to come in and cook side by side with people so that they can learn in their own safe environment how to prepare some Alpha Gal safe dairy and other items.
I want to thank you for coming here tonight and talking to us. And this is Jerry Foster and Dusty Condon with the Brown County Hour. And I'm Sarah Lytle. Thank you for listening.
Oh,
these songs when they drop the bombs and everything's laid to waste. I'd like to think there'd be some of us left that feel still worth saving. Are we still killing kids in the name of country? We let the last man starve. Do we rip them apart from their loving families? Just wanted them to be better off. Won't you sing a song from the future? Let us know nothing's for naught. This is our last dance, I'll take it on the off chance. This is the last chance we got. Honky-tonks and bars and big country stars, when they leave us to our fate, is it too much to ask for a slow country waltz to help ease us at the end of the day? And when the red cloud towers up on the horizon, guide us on our way. Won't you sing a song from the future? Let us know nothing's tonight. If this is our last dance, I'll take it on the off chance. This is the last chance we got. There'll still be songs when they drop the bombs. Will there be reason yet to play? Are the dark days ahead now laying behind us? Can we find a better way? Won't you sing us a song from the future? Know nothing's tonight. If this is our last dance, I'll take it on the off chance. This is the last chance we got. If this is our last dance, I'll take it on the off chance. This is the last chance we got.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
Brown County Playhouse's Executive Director, Carolyn McCutcheon, gives us a spring update covering the April radio play, 1984, and the Variety Show happening in May, as well as discussing the huge mural on the side of the building. We hear from Dave Seastrom with his harrowing tale that led to him swearing off hitchhiking for good, and Father Kentucky's song, God Bless America. But first, we begin segment 3 with a poetry feature. Rick Albertson shares a new Stoveside Survey, this time meditating on the April 2024 solar eclipse.
Looking at two eerie photos near the cabin during 2024 total solar eclipse. Lasting only 174 seconds, yet occurring perhaps only once every 75 years or so, the sun totally eclipsed its way directly over the cabin in Brown County on April 8, 2024. Just another early spring day, above a bright blue, patchy white sky, below birds flirting, chirping, sharp, distinct shadows, creating visual depth in between, as my grandson and I somewhat patiently awaited. That is until about 3 p.m., when an otherworldly unease began to settle upon the land and within our souls. The sky became confused, a 360-degree orangey-pink sunset-like glow upon the horizon. Shadows, too, now dancing in fuzzy circles, no longer distinct lines. Nature's FAA broadcast of geomagnetic distress signals over the instinct frequency, birds responding with immediate returns to base in complete silence. We looked at one another, wonder in our eyes, our guts communicating a hitherto unknown threat. 3:06 p.m., and all of us, animate and inanimate, descended into darkness, the sun but a narrow highlight backlighting the moon's darkened disk. The physical world collapsed into a dreadful death, yet suddenly memorialized by a funereal choir of frenzied crickets, toads, and frogs. A few moments later, an unseen wave of the conductor's baton quieted the choir. Another wave and a resurrection choir of birds heralded him, slowly pushing back the darkened stone of night. Unease cast aside, the day became day once again.
This is Chad Crothers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB. We are joined in the studio today by Carolyn McCutcheon. Carolyn is the executive director of the Brown County Playhouse. Welcome to the Brown County Hour, Carolyn.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to stop by and visit.
Real quick, just for listeners who may be living under a rock, what is the Brown County Playhouse?
The Brown County Playhouse is a 75-year-old venue that was originally started by IU, Indiana University, for their summer stock. So it was originally a playhouse, you know, as it's labeled, and the original building was a barn and a tent. So they didn't even have restrooms. So, you know, so anyway, but over the years, it has been built into a beautiful theater. And we offer a variety of entertainment options for people. So, you know, we have plays, we have concerts, we have contests.
What's your favorite thing that they've done recently?
Oh, gosh. Some of the concerts are really good, you know, and we have 375 seats, so it's a very intimate setting. There's not a bad seat in place. So it's just a really, really nice venue.
Carolyn McCutcheon here on the Brown County Hour. Carolyn, how did you come to be a director? Tell us how you came to be the boss of the Playhouse.
Oh, wow. Kind of a roundabout way. So I worked in nonprofit work in Indianapolis. My husband and I lived there. And then I worked at Ivy Tech and most recently ran their event center there. So my husband started working with the Playhouse doing the talent booking. And then I got reeled in and started to work with them too. And then eventually they needed an executive director. So I said, hey, I'd like to do it. So they gave me the opportunity. It's a job that is not boring ever, you know. So, and, you know, being in a nonprofit with a small staff, you never know what you're going to be doing. You know, some days I'm cleaning the restrooms and sometimes I'm emptying the trash and sometimes I'm out in the community leaving rack cards at different places or, you know, just having a great time.
Well, if you're walking around downtown Nashville these days, it's hard to miss the big mural.
Yeah.
The new mural that's on the side of the Playhouse. And this is where I kind of wish we were a TV show instead of a radio show so we could show off this. We'll put a picture of it on our website. Tell us about this mural. Describe it and tell us how this came to be.
The mural has been in the planning stages for several years through several board chairs and executive directors. And their vision was to, because people walk, you know, down Van Buren and they see this little tiny storefront and they say, well, how can that be the Playhouse? You know, and then they go inside and it's like, oh my goodness, you know, it's much bigger than you think. So the board had this vision of blowing out the wall of the side. And so you could see inside what's in there. So that was the vision that they came up with. And so, most recently, Kathy Anderson was involved in that, and she did a great job and got us grants and, you know, funding from different people and donations. So, and the mural is, you know, basically looking at the audience, the stage. It has Jonathan Banks, a picture of Jonathan Banks and a picture of Kevin Klein, both of who were on that stage when they went to IU.
Oh, wow.
As theater students.
Huh.
So anyway, and it's just, it's very different. It's very colorful. The artist, we did a national search. We did a local search and no one was interested, you know, and so we did a statewide search again. So we did a national search. And so this artist by the name of Sitke applied, and he's more of a street artist. If you've ever seen the photos of, you know, walking down a sidewalk and there's something that looks like a koi pond or something like that, and, you know, but it's three-dimensional. So that's the kind of work he does. So it's very three-dimensional. It's very colorful.
It is.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
And so...
Words can't do it justice.
It can't.
You've got to go see it.
You really do. You have to go see it. And then we have a little spot there, a little Instagram spot with a microphone so people can step up on the stairs and, you know, get their picture taken, you know, on the stage, you know, performing there at the Playhouse. So
yeah,
it's been something that has just been really nice. And through the generosity of, you know, grants and, you know, individual donors, it was completely paid for.
Well, speaking of things to see at the Playhouse, let's close with a rundown of what you've got coming up. So we are into April now.
Yes.
I understand the next performance starting the second weekend of April is the radio play 1984.
Tell us
about that.
Oh, that is really, there's been a lot of excitement about that. And, you know, I think probably everybody has read that book in high school, I would think. I did. So, you know, and it was required reading. And so you've read the book and it's just, it's very timely. You know, it's very timely with political things that are going on now. It is a radio play, so there will not be sets. There will not be costumes. It'll just be the actors, you know, with the script in front of them and reading it. So, and then sound effects, I'm not sure. But the director is a new director that we've worked with. He's a young man, and we're excited to have him do this and have his vision on our stage.
In the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that I do have a very small part
in
that radio play.
All right. Well, congratulations. So,
let's talk about some stuff I'm not in at the Playhouse. How about this variety show that's coming up May 2nd?
Second, yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, we had an open Saturday night, and so we were kind of brainstorming what could we do. And I said, let's do a vaudeville show. I think that would be a lot of fun. So it's kind of morphed into a variety show. So it'll be very different because we'll have probably 8 to 10 acts that come up, and they're really fast, you know, types of entertainment. So we're going to have a magician, we're having a ventriloquist, we have a skit from our next play, which is Moon Over Buffalo. So there's going to be a skit. We have music.
So Sammy Riggs.
Sammy Riggs will be there. She was the winner of the Songwriter Showdown. And
yes, and a recent featured a musical guest here on the broadcast.
Yes, so she's amazing. I mean, her stuff is so good.
You're also going to have Lloyd Wood, who is the band leader at the Nashville Opry, Little Nashville Opry.
Yes, and I don't think he's been back in town for a very long time. So we're excited about that. So I don't know exactly what he'll do, but you know, we will. You know, it'll be fun. So we're going to have an MC. We're going to have we're going to have the cards that have the act's name on it, and we'll have someone bring the cards out and put it on the easel. It'll be a fun night.
Okay. Remind us one more time of the dates for that and where do we go online for more information?
Okay. The date for that is May 2nd, which is Saturday. If you want to see other things that are coming to the Playhouse, just go to our website. Our calendar is up there with information about all the upcoming shows, the plays, the movies, our senior movies, which are a lot of fun. And so it's, you know, there's a lot of things that you can see that we're doing and we keep it updated. And again, ticket link is right there. And some of these are free, so you don't have to have tickets.
And that's browncountyplayhouse.org.
Correct.
We've been speaking with Carolyn McCutcheon, Executive Director of the Brown County Playhouse. For the Brown County Hour on WFHB, I'm Chad Crothers.
One 2-day experience changed my outlook on hitchhiking forever. In 1971, my friend Jeff and I were on the western slopes of Colorado looking for work. After a discussion, we parted ways and I decided to go it alone. Soon, I was walking down a desolate 2-lane highway, wondering why I had made this decision. My cat, Nub, on a leash, a guitar, a backpack with one change of clothes, a sleeping bag, a poncho, and $10 in cash was the sum total of everything I had with me. After walking for quite some time, two cowboys in a pickup truck sporting a rifle in the rear window came screaming past me. One of the cowboys was leaning out of the passenger window, and as they drove past, he took careful aim and threw a full can of beer that brushed the side of my head before exploding on the ground. The driver hit the brakes, and I could hear them arguing about what I can only assume was my fate. We were out in the middle of nowhere, and I was completely defenseless. In what seemed like an incredibly long time, a decision was made, and the driver put the truck in gear and they sped off. Shaken, but happy with the outcome, I kept walking. A good while later, a middle-aged guy pulled over and offered me a ride. Grateful to be moving again, I listened to this man tell the story of showing a new car to a prospective customer who greeted him at the door in a negligee. As they were getting it on, her husband came home, and he made it out of there just in the nick of time. He said he had to take a leak, and he pulled off the highway onto a 1-lane dirt road and kept driving. When he finished relieving himself, he got back into the car, and it was clear he had evil intentions. I reached into my pocket, opened my still-concealed knife, and prepared to defend myself. When I refused to submit, he sized me up, and for whatever reason, he took me back to the highway and dropped me off. At this point, I was pretty freaked out. Two near-death experiences in one morning put me on edge. It was a long time before the next car stopped, and they were a young couple on their honeymoon. That night, they shared a meal with me and as I told my tale of intrigue and adventure. The next morning, they drove to Denver, handed me a $20 bill, and wished me luck. A short while later, I got a ticket for hitchhiking, and the cop warned me that if he saw me again, I was going to jail. Luck was with me, and I got a ride to Burlington. Walking off the highway to a diner to get something to eat, the waitress warned me that the local sheriff hated long hairs, and if he caught me, he would beat the crap out of me, cut my hair off with a knife, and keep me in jail indefinitely with no phone call. Back on the highway, it was getting dark, and all I could see were the headlights of oncoming cars. Hiding behind a guardrail, I stood up, stuck out my thumb, and two guys in a muscle car offered me a ride. Just when I thought things were getting better, they told me they were brothers, that one of them had just been released from prison the day before, and we were riding in a stolen car. Then they informed me that they were on their way to Michigan to kill the ex-wife who sent the one brother to prison. We drove through the night and pulled into a diner in Kansas City. The fellow in the booth next to us started harassing me because of my hair, and one of the brothers leaned over the booth and told him to shut his mouth. As soon as we were back on 70 East, the fellow from the diner was right on our tail trying to run us off the road. Laughing as he reached into his satchel the brother in the passenger seat pulled out a gun, leaned out of the car, and positioned himself to take a shot. This persuaded the other driver to back off, and the brothers laughed uproariously, convincing them that turning north in Indianapolis would take them to Michigan. They dropped me off 3 blocks from my parents' home. Mom and Dad were in the backyard grilling some burgers when I walked up, and after warm greetings, they asked about my adventures. Smiling, I said, "I'll have to tell you about that sometime." And that was the very last time I ever hitchhiked. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
God blessed America a long time ago. There were times of plenty, now there's even more. There are trees and bees and flowers from shore to shore. When God blessed America a long time ago, God blessed America once upon a time. Folks came across that water, steam-powered ocean line. The sick and hungry huddled masses came to that Staten Isle. When God blessed America once upon a time, get a lift, 'cause God blessed America, now it's only for the rich. Best is stealing from the working folk, and a work ain't worth a dime. Fish just don't exist anymore, even if you toe the line. Make money off our broken backs and sweat pump from our nose. Yes, God blessed America, but it don't come around no more. Yeah, God blessed America, but it don't come around no more.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 169 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.